This episode and a lot of the other content we produce would not be possible without the kind support of our patrons, especially our producers, Holly and Leanne. Thanks for your kindness. You can become a patron at patreon.com/explorations. That's Patreon, patreon.com/explorations.
Welcome to another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill. This is Jeff's wife, Tasha, welcoming you. And I'm here with Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
And our regular host, my wonderful, loving husband, Jeff. Take over.
Wow, that was spur of the moment. You did a good job.
Is your heart beating?
I hope it's beating.
Wow. Extra fast.
I had to jump up and turn on the video camera, and I left these guys in a lurch for a second. But Tasha swooped in like a sexy unicorn and fixed the day. So this episode 101 of the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast, we're talking about art. Not the guy who works at the grocery store that does carryouts, but actually art. This is a listener requested topic, and so where are we going to start with this one?
Well, let's bring him up to speed. I kind of thought this would be a easy, quick kind of throw it on the table and let's talk about art, and then Jeff starts talking about, well, what's really art versus a craft versus a project versus. Do you have to have some certain level of skill and expertise for whatever is actually created to be considered art? And I was like, ooh, I'd never thought about this before, you know, because, and then I started thinking if there's some level of potential intimidation for some people. I mean, I approach art, all this discussion aside for a second, in my brain, art is setting up the easel and an art project, and you know, invitations for the kids to kind of express themselves through various mediums of paint and paper and colored pencils and glue and things like that. And it's just something that I bring to the table. And I never, ever, ever stopped to think that that could be scary to somebody, that if me standing up in front of the room and say you need to do an art project every day, somebody could have like an intimidated, like, oh my God, art, oh no. Just like some people approach science or math or being told that they have to do science and they freeze because they're not really sure what to do. Yeah. And I'm still kind of stuck there with just this aha that, you know, I might have been missing the boat here and unintentionally excluding some people when I just kind of make it sound like, duh, this is just something you should be able to do.
Well, I mean, I'm cool with calling that art in our profession, but I think for me, art is it's something that requires some skill and competence with the tools and some understanding of the process to rise to the level of art. I don't think that everything that gets slapped together is art. And I'm cool if we call it that, but I just think in my mind there's the idea of craft too. And sometimes you think a craft is something let's do a craft. Let's make the paper plate fish as a craft. But you know, in our history, you know, the people that were making boats and making whiskey barrels and carving stone and all those kinds of those were craftsmen, and there was a lot of skill involved in that too. And so for me, you know, the stuff that 2-year-olds are doing with crayons and paint is 2-year-olds with crayons and paint. It's not a craft or an art until there's some skill behind it. And that's kind of a little bit more esoteric than we probably need to be on our dang podcast.
Yeah, and I agree, and I actually agree with you with that. And it's still, there's still room for a mind shift for me as I approach then the work, you know, that, you know, clearly this would have not come up in a conversation right now if I wasn't needing to hear that. So that tells me that in the next little bit of time, there's going to be somebody who's, you know, in the audience and is like, do you know how scary it is? And I'm going to be like, oh, we just talked about this.
Well, and I think you're right. I think it can be scary and daunting. And for some people, it's the mess that comes with it. It's for
the
some people. Yeah, and for some people, it's a budget. The scare is budgetary because when you use up your consumables, you don't have any more consumables in some places. And so I think there are real fears for something that is real easy for us to do. Here's stuff.
Yeah.
Go at it. Mm-hmm. It can be daunting for all kinds of reasons.
The listener request, I think, was more about the expectations of doing a project and process versus product, which,
project.
Yeah.
Process versus
a receipt
project.
To send home for
right,
the day.
Tasha reminded me that my art workshop that I like to call it art is not a receipt for childcare, because often whatever we choose to call it for the next 30 minutes, the thing that goes home in the cubby often does serve as an indicator to somebody who wrote a check that my money is,
something.
That I'm getting
for
my money.
Getting 8 cents of glue back on.
Well, I do like to tell parents, when I do a parent workshop, have you gotten the random cuttings yet in an envelope? And like every head in the room starts nodding, and I'm like, stop, here's what you're going to do. It's already in an envelope. You're going to slap a stamp on that bad boy and send it to your mother-in-law, right? Because it's already in an envelope. It's signed, sealed, delivered. Just get that bad boy out of the house.
You know, the holidays or make...
I like to give parents permission to get rid of stuff, you know, that you don't have to save it. And we can brainstorm techniques on how you can save stuff, and especially nowadays you can take pictures of the stuff, you know, but if you felt that you needed to save every single shred of stuff, you'd make yourself absolutely
insane.
For
some people it wouldn't be that much, but others it'd be like
boxes and boxes. This is one of my non-compromisables. I mean, I'm not a fan of what my language is product-oriented art. So Jeff joked about the fish and the last time that we were here for podcasting, and they actually made one and put it on the fridge or something. I don't remember all of it, but it was hilarious. Like,
he goes, let's make this for Lisa.
So
she's
wonderful picture on the internet of Lisa flipping it off.
Oh, yes.
Flipping
yes.
off the fish. But, you know, I mean, I assist teachers in moving away from feeling like they have to do that kind of work. And I think the best way to assist in teachers moving away from having to do product-oriented stuff is to kind of get in there and deal with the muck and the mire of where that expectation came from. How are you coming to the belief that you're supposed to send something home every day?
Yeah,
was it taught to you? Did you read about it? Was it something you did as a child?
And I think in a lot of situations, maybe in most situations, it's just habit.
Yeah.
It's the way it's been.
And
it's the way the person in this room did it before me.
We always
the way
do fish
it was
on
when
Fridays.
I was a kid. Yeah, F.
Fish Fridays.
In February.
February Fish Fridays.
Yeah, there. Put that on your calendar. And so.
Calendar?
What? Oh.
That was episode 8.
So what the whole process product thing, you talk about process and product, and I'll tell you what episode calendars was.
Oh, you're going to circle back. Well, I mean, again, first there has to be that sense of maybe I'm doing a lot of product-oriented stuff that looks like something. I mean, if I swoop in and I say that's at the workshops, if I tell you just stop doing this, that's me modeling bad school. If I just come in and say don't do this anymore, and then you go back and you stop doing it because Lisa Murphy said that I'm not allowed to do paper plate fish anymore, you're missing the point. I mean, let's investigate why are we doing fish in the first place. To me, there's always that level of coming back to what are we doing and why are we doing it and who is it for? You know, it's not anti-fish. If some kid walks into the room and is like, oh, Miss Lisa, shoot, I wanna cut this plate out into the shape of a fish, then my job is to facilitate that.
Yeah.
You know, what are you needing? What are you needing in order to do that? And the hardest part in that dialogue exchange is for the adult to actually then stop and wait for the child to actually respond. Like, what are you needing? Pause.
And
that
can
take
an
hour.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's faster and easier for me just to cut it out into the shape of a fish.
Or
but,
say, here, go.
Yeah, but, you know, so facilitate versus instigate, which I keep asking. Have we done facilitate versus instigate? Because I think that would be a really good episode. It would assist in maybe clarifying some of that language. I am a firm believer in putting out materials for the children to engage in free flow exploration, which does not mean that they're allowed, you know, to run around with markers and color on the walls. You know, that's not what that means. It's my job to set out materials and then assist them in using those. And if at the end of the day, what ends up going home is a couple of pictures that somebody wants to put on the refrigerator, fine, but it was not because I said today we're all making X, Y, Z, and ABC. I mean, I can riff on this for hours.
Yeah, and so it might have been just Susie and Johnny who wanted to work on process art and do something while the other ones are house area Legos or whatever.
And it could have been that I just wanted to smack the brush on the paper for 25 minutes because that kind of felt really cool. Mm-hmm. And adults who then approach that as some kind of, oh my gosh, we have to save this and get your name on it. You know, come to the embracing of the idea of it being process oriented is not just that we put open-ended materials out and let the kids do what they want with them. It's that as the adult, I'm valuing the process, which might mean that the kid doesn't need their name on it, doesn't need to save it. And it was just 20 minutes of banging, and that's what I was needing to do, and now I'm getting on with my day. Yep, so yep. Almost going back to some of the praise stuff, to put too much overemphasis on, look what you made and look what you did and we're going to save this and hang it up. You know, who is that for? Maybe the kid could be done.
Yeah, and I mean, I've had children who've wanted, like, they've just had 20 pieces of paper and that's all they did, might be a little bit different. I ask them, which ones would you like to take home with you? Mm. Which ones do you want to save? And they get to pick and choose. I said,
they might not want any of them.
Yeah. And then,
as adults, if they say they don't want them, don't stick back.
Oh,
write
well,
on
are you
it.
Sure?
Well,
yeah, right.
Well, yeah, and they might start stacking them up and then they get sidetracked. And it's like, I just leave them there. And it's like, if they're still there at the end of the day, we deal with it then. Otherwise, it's like, I'm fine with
Mackenzie knows who did it all. I mean, we used to have auctions at the end of the week. Sometimes we'll get asked, like, what did you do with all the art, you know? And if it was not named, if the kid didn't want their name on it, you know, it would just kind of be spread out on Friday and be like, who's needing any of this? And we would have children say things like, well, that's mine and I don't want to bring it home, but my mom wants me to bring it home. I mean, kids are so smart, you know?
Or sometimes just sticking it back onto the shelf and then reusing it for another project.
Hey mom, look what I did at work today.
And so
I think, just in case we've got listeners that aren't understanding the whole value of process, what good is splotching the paintbrushes up and down on the paper with all the colors and all the splattering and all the mess that comes with that? What good comes from that?
If the wolf walks in while you are, you know, the kids are banging, you know, paintbrushes onto the paper, I mean, all that fine motor and the grasping and the stages of scribbling that we're familiar with because of the work of Rhoda Kellogg, and that first stage of scribbling, which is banging, and the kids are not saying, oh, I can't wait to bring this home and hang this up on the refrigerator. There's 80 stages of scribbling that children need to go through before they write. And as educators, we need to be aware of that, you know, that they're not wasting the paper.
No.
They're doing what they need to do so we can get to that point that other people are looking for them to reach.
And so it's about the intrinsic value, or the general value of this thing in this moment.
Is giving me pleasure.
That alone is the valuable thing.
Yeah.
And I think we lose that, and in our rush to move on to the next thing.
Because the schedule said, or because the calendar said it was fish week.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll say that in the workshop too, is that the kid probably just painted on a paper plate, and then while they were napping, you know, we kind of sliced it and diced it and turned it into something, and you know, then take it home and. Well, I didn't make that. Yes, you did. Yes, no, I didn't. Yes, you did. It's on the calendar.
Yeah, so that's
Or I think you've mentioned also there's that 8x10 sheet of construction paper and the child colors in the one corner and
poopy face used to cut it out and put all the other paper back.
No.
Whose needs are being met by that?
And so what about, this is one I see a lot, is adults sitting around in chairs made for 18-month-olds with scissors during nap time, cutting out circles and triangles
prepping for them to do.
Well, what's
project?
My soundbite? I mean, if you spend more time getting it ready than it takes the kids to do it, chances are it's product oriented, or it's serving some purpose that you think you need. You're making somebody happy who's probably not even in the room, or giving the false impression that kids have learned about their shapes today because we put bingo daubers on a square. Meanwhile, they're 18 months old, like you said, right? And not one kid is thinking, oh, look at me, I'm putting circles onto squares. They're saying, wow, I really like smacking this.
And if they are thinking I'm putting on, they're thinking, why the hell am I putting circles onto squares, is what they're thinking, if they're thinking anything
about
that.
Is this going to get me a job?
Yeah, am I?
Maybe it's dice.
Am I being made career in college? college ready?
Am I gonna get
That's a core joke.
Am I gonna get a good job at the square stamping factory from doing this? So there's
we're getting
that
them ready
thing.
For something, I guess.
Yeah.
My you know takeaway with when it comes to and I still like the kind of deeper conversation about process and or product and art and is it really art, and I still like that for our listeners. I my bias, and I'll totally own it. I want to see some place in the space, whether it's big or little, whether it's outside or inside, it doesn't matter to me, where children can use paint as a medium of self-expression. And it's going to look different based on the age group that you work with. Mm-hmm. Common sense clearly needs to be kind of filtered through this as well. You know, we're not doing colored pencils in the infant room, right? Oh, oh my eye! But I think turning the lens inward and asking ourselves, what are our reactions to this? You know, am I worried about the mess? Am I worried it's going to get out of control? You know, what is getting in the way of me simply putting out a piece of paper and letting kids, you know, splotch with their feet or with their fingers with some paint on that?
Well, let's go through some of that, because if there are people that are listening that are in that finished product kind of assembly line process of doing stuff, so you've got that receipt to send home at the end of the day, and they want to start taking baby steps towards the change, and we want to meet them where they're at. What are some of the obstacles they got to overcome? One is the possible parent need for that thing. How do we?
Well, I've said this before when we podcast that I'm always hesitant to go into workshop mode. In the workshops, though, we kind of go through the law of thirds, which says that when it comes to changing your mind, and you start going, hey, I don't want to do this product stuff anymore, I want to take a baby step away from that, only a third of the parents in the program are actually going to notice, which I think is important. A third of them are going to notice right away. True. A third of them are going to notice eventually, and a third of them are never, ever, ever going to notice that you've changed your mind.
Those that notice, some of them are going to be happy.
Well, but that's where I'm saying is that of the third that actually notice, only a third of that third are actually going to come in and say something. So the reality is, just based on a numbers game, you are not going to have 45 irate mothers banging down the door saying, where's my paper bag pumpkin? It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So for baby stepping, I think first is just opening your eyes to see what other options are, because if you've gotten in the habit of only doing this kind of product oriented construction cutout business, you don't know what you don't know. So for us to come in and say do more open ended stuff and you have no idea what to do, you're frustrated, and now you're going to do a bigger cutout project on Wednesday because we didn't empower you. So big sheets of paper, washable paint, and making sure that it's really washable, mm-hmm. Which is very important. Otherwise, you're going to be all very, very upset. And sometimes for some programs, it's just a matter of dragging the easel out now every single day. Like, instead of it being a special treat, the easel is just always there with mm-hmm. paint in it, and the brush is already in it, and some paper underneath with a drop cloth or something that's under and a drying rack right next to it. I mean, that could be a baby step that lasts you months. But now that there's that visual invitation for the children that this is something that you get to use on a regular basis, and then what comes out of that would be what we would call process oriented
art.
Well,
if you don't have an easel or have the money to get one, get a hunk of board and just prop it
paper
against the wall.
On the floor is an easel. Paper on the wall. Family child care provider with sliding glass doors. Paper under the table is an uh-huh. easel. We use windows. We use the sliding glass mm-hmm. door. And I mean, you don't need paper. I mean, and that
no.
could
yeah.
that's a slippery slope into potentially mm-hmm. another topic. But kids do not need paper. We have trained them to think that they need mm-hmm. to capture it, when the reality is that they'll just paint right on wherever you do it. And we would actually put sheets just out. And it's really interesting at workshops how, for adults, I have to put paper down or they will not accept the invitation to come and use the fly swatters and the plungers. When I just put a sheet out with kids and fly swatters and plungers and paint, kids will accept the invitation to just make marks on the sheet, and adults won't do that, and it's really interesting.
Yeah, and for a lot of them, their own body becomes the easel. Zoe, our daughter, when she was little, we'd be like on a road trip or something,
yes.
and she'd be sitting in her car seat and just writing on her arms and her legs, and
because you know it was a new thing, and will mom allow me to do this?
Maybe we should start doing that right now. Where's my markers?
Where's my?
Well, I was at the store the other day with her granddaughter Rowan, baby bunny Rowan. And
Pod baby.
And she had written on paper because I had my little list of things, and she wanted her own, and then she filled it up and munched on it slightly, and it was... She had a snack, and it was like, it's not good anymore, and she goes, leg? She pulls up her pant leg, says, yeah, go ahead.
It's just a leg.
It's a leg. It's okay. Washable. Yeah, go ahead.
And so when should we start letting kids do art?
Doing art, exploring creative materials, I mean, right away. I mean, in the infant room, I'm not putting, you know, I'm not... The babies aren't crawling through colored shaving cream. I mean, again, that's that common sense thing.
Yeah.
I know they're going to put it all in their mouth. So if the babies are crawling through something, it's going to be pudding or it's going to be oatmeal or it's going to be apples.
It's going to be mouth friendly, yeah, right? Yeah. Drooled upon.
But that's usually their first one. And I have a slideshow that I show people of it. Usually the first, we throw out some paint just on big long sheets of paper and the babies just kind of start crawling through it. So I wouldn't say it has to be paint, but it's some kind of sensory experience, mm-hmm, for the babies.
Something tactile
to start experiencing. And mark making. My body can make a mark somewhere. Full
and
body
it doesn't
painting.
Have to be cut out and
oh, no, it's
with
big,
their
long
name on it.
No,
so
it's
like,
big,
yeah.
Long. Yeah.
And so...
And then it just progresses
from
that point.
Do you see and hear the same thing I hear about the programs that don't start that till their kids are three?
Probably not. Why don't you talk about that?
I hear and I've seen posts about this that, you know, it's just too messy and those kids aren't old enough for painting because
we need to be doing something else.
Apparently maybe. There's worksheets to do. Maybe flashcards. I don't know where it comes from, but but some of it is they don't want to deal with the mess and the cleanup and
this is when I wish there was. And sorry, this sounds really mean, but that's when I wish there was a trap door. You know, I mean, if you're actually in this profession and you find yourself not creating engaging, relevant environments because you're worried about cleaning it up, I'm sorry, that tells me you're done. Need a break for a while.
Or check the policy of the program that you work at or the policy you put in play. Does it say that they're going to get messy? Please dress them appropriately.
Yeah, and then that gets into enforcing. If it's in the handbook, then we have directors that need to grow a backbone sometimes, just as much as our providers that need to grow a backbone sometimes.
Well, the worst one I've seen was, and it's kind of off the tracks from art, but somebody did it was probably 6-8 months ago now on Facebook. There was a Play-Doh recipe or something that I shared and in her program there wasn't any Play-Doh until they were age 5 until that was a go to school thing.
Yeah.
See, and I would love to have conversation. We started art. I mean, as soon as they're crawling around, they're on the deck, crawling through, and then it turns into, you know, I want a brush, and then it turns into I need a sponge.
Oh yeah, anything they see older kids doing, they want that stuff and getting it. So
the mess thing, I don't
that's
its own
get
topic.
It, but yeah.
I don't. If you know that you have an aversion to mess, with all the love in my heart, this is not a job for you.
Yeah.
You know, and this would be something that I would want to make sure when we talked a couple weeks ago about training programs for early childhood people. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to make peace with this before you show up that first day. So if there is a some kind of training venue or avenue that allows you to kind of realize that... We got to weed these people out.
Well, and if you don't like the messy play, there are ways to take baby steps to allow
but
it.
But if you
know you don't like it, this is not
your job.
Yeah, true,
you know, but
true,
if you're willing to walk down that path, or if you're with a collaborative team that she can be the boss of this and you can be the boss of that, then
she's got the messy,
perfect.
I'll help with cleanup.
But
and
then
stuff,
you're not inhibiting the children's exploration of this environment. You know, or be willing to delegate. I mean, Mackenzie can be the boss of half of
these
projects.
Oh, there's the older kids can go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I like to do art. I like to provide art. I like to provide a lot of opportunity for the kids to engage in that. To me, it's one more center that's in the space that is available daily. It's not a special treat.
Okay, so I got a process question. So can part of the process being you as an adult who've got more experience and more knowledge demonstrating skills, or do we want to just step back and let them make all the discoveries themselves?
That's a tricky question. It comes up a lot, and I have like 14 ways of answering it. But my first question to the person who asks is always, how old are the children that you're working with?
Let's say 37 months old.
37? Jesus. How many years is that?
That's 3.5. one.
Who does that? That's some a pet peeve do. Of mine. It's that like, is a huge pet peeve of mine.
Mine too. Three. That's why I'm doing it.
Like, no, I'm sorry.
How many months am I? Somebody do the math. The answer is it depends.
Okay.
The answer is it depends. Now, this is one of the non-compromisables. I don't draw for kids, and my rationale is if I'm mentoring and you draw for children, they copy you. So we'll meet you where you are. We'll acknowledge that that's what you've been doing. It's a habit, but I need you now facilitating and working the room. And if I've lost you to this table drawing hearts and rainbows and butterflies, you're not deepening the explorations of everybody at the space. And you're saying this is how you draw. After this point, I know that there's certain things that kids, I mean, and you probably could name them, but they want you to draw houses, trees, people, cars, trains. I mean, there's about 6 or 7 things. So I stack the deck in my favor, and I make sure that if I'm going to be in the classroom for a while, that I have books with those things
pictures,
in it.
Pictures, actual objects of it.
Yeah, so it's very basic. Miss Lisa doesn't draw for kids. You're wanting to draw a picture of where you sleep at night. That's fantastic. So let's go look in this book and see if there's a place that looks like where you sleep at night. Mm-hmm. And sidebar, I always say where you sleep at night. I don't say house anymore.
Oh, very good.
And I learned that probably at my first student teaching position spot when I was teaching at the housing projects in Chicago, mm-hmm. and the kids were all sleeping in the cars outside. So it's not always a house. It's where you sleep at night, because sometimes it's a hotel, sometimes it's a car, sometimes it's the side of the freeway. Anyway, that's a story for another time. But so I have it there. So, hey, let's see if there's a place here. And I'm wondering, what are you needing? So facilitate always versus instigate. If, you know, I don't want the kid to be frustrated. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm not so invested in this process component that I'm going to watch this kid get completely frustrated. But a little bit of healthy frustration, if this kid is just used to having an adult sit down and draw it for them, that's a different kind of frustration as opposed to, you know, I'm really attempting to create something here and I'm needing some assistance, right? Yeah. So that scaffolding component, what are you needing? What are you able to do by yourself versus what can you do with some assistance? And right now, I'm not stingy with my assistance, but are you really needing it? Or have you just become used to getting it right away when you call for help?
I think something else we should touch on here is the how this whole process becomes much richer when you're in multi-age groups.
Oh, totally.
Because then the skill there's a scale of skill where you've got the 4 and 5 year olds who are pretty adept with the scissors, showing the 2.5 year olds how to do things, and the kid who knows how to cut a heart out by folding the paper in half is a guru.
In the
room.
Have we done
all those
mixed-age
kind of things.
Groupings?
No, I was going to say that might have to be an upcoming episode.
I'm a vigilante mixed-age grouper.
And so we're pushing on to half an hour here. Anything else we want to talk about before we move
now
on?
Now I want to go paint.
Well, we can do that.
I'm going to go make a picture.
We're in good shape episode-wise, so if you want to go paint, you can go paint.
I have an easel even that Jeff made, if you want
to
use it.
We can try to do some R&D for some of the
projects. And you are 528 plus years old. On your 44th birthday, you were 528 months old. So you add however.
I'm so gonna say this for the rest of my life.
You got to add however many months since your birthday, and you'll be in good shape.
Okay.
So that's how
I'm
many.
I'm 500 and some change months old.
Yeah, you're 520 change months old. This has been another episode of Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks especially to our patrons for their support.
Thank you.
You can become one if you want to. If you're enjoying the show, if you want to support the stuff we're doing, we'd appreciate it. Play on. Enjoy the day. Bye-bye.
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 This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.